This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. Franz Schubert was not a political person. There was one incident in his early 20s when he and several friends were arrested on suspicion of revolutionary activities, but that was more a case of getting a little drunk and rowdy than anything else. Otherwise, Schubert was content to spend his life writing music, playing it at parties and gatherings, and relying on the kindness of his friends for his next meal. But when he was 17 and just beginning to find his voice as a composer, his hometown of Vienna was the site of one of the most important events of 19th century Europe, the Congress of Vienna, which in the aftermath of Napoleon's attempts to take over the continent would redraw the political map of Europe in a way that would last for almost 100 years. At the time, Schubert was making a meager living as an assistant teacher in his father's school, and by his own admission, not a very good teacher. His primary focus was on writing, and the seeming ease with which melodies poured out of him during his short life was astonishing even to his close friends. Even though he dreamed of becoming the next Beethoven and composing symphonies that would change the world, the majority of works he was writing at this point were more intimate. Solo piano pieces, songs, and chamber music, though he had completed several larger works, including choral pieces, operettas, and other works for the stage, and two symphonies. Even though hardly any of these larger-scale works were performed during his lifetime, Schubert was hardly unknown. His friends would organize Schubertiades, evening performances of his songs, piano, and chamber music, and everyone who was anyone in Vienna tried to attend at least one. A few of his compositions were actually published, which brought Schubert a very modest income. And every so often, enough players would get together to read through one or more of the larger works. His third symphony, which he wrote in 1815, may have been played at one of these private performances, but we don't know for sure. The first documented performance was in 1860, over 30 years after his death. And even then, it was only the finale. The symphony wasn't performed in its entirety until 1881. The opening of Schubert's Third Symphony could have been written by Haydn, a slow, searching introduction in the historically grand key of D major. The winds provide a pulse that serves as a foundation for ascending scales in the strings, while the flute and clarinet have a dialogue. It's the kind of melodic give and take that became a Schubert characteristic. After this majestic beginning, the first movement's main section seems to slip in through the back door. As the solo clarinet gently plays a perky melody with just a touch of fanfare to it. This transition seems so simple and natural, but the manuscript shows that Schubert struggled over it. He scored it first for oboe and horns, and then reassigned it to the strings before finally settling on the clarinet, which is fitting since the clarinet, which had only recently been invented, is really the melodic star of this symphony. The clarinet melody leads to a second theme based on the string scales in the introduction. And then a rustic oboe melody, which is similar in character to the clarinet tune. These themes provide the basic material for the whole movement, including several harmonic twists. The second movement of a typical classical symphony would be slow, and Schubert did begin his with an adagio theme, but then he seemingly changed his mind and started over in a quicker, though still relaxed, tempo. Again, the clarinet is a prominent voice, especially in the movement's central section. Midway through, the violins play a slightly slower but even more beautiful melody. And even though Schubert doesn't develop it here, it's the kind of tune that would become one of his trademarks, adding an atmosphere of enchantment wherever it appears. The slow movement is followed by a vigorous minuet/scherzo. With oboe and bassoon serenading us in the central section. The finale is a busy tarantella. And Schubert brings back the rising scale figures that have been a part of this symphony since the opening. While he was in his early teens, Schubert played violin in his school orchestra, playing mostly symphonies and overtures by Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven, music that was only a couple of decades old, or less. Even though he was also taking formal lessons with the renowned composer Antonio Salieri, playing these works gave him valuable insight on how to construct a symphony literally from the inside out. It was insight that would make his symphonies popular in concert halls all over the world, even though most of them weren't discovered until decades after his death, at the age of 31. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.